His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitya Leela Pravishta Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashri Srimad. His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Oh, guess what? This is a verse that is in proper meter. So we don't have it on the board. So we'll just go with translation and purport. Today we'll keep it short. Okay. This is chapter 10, Canto 5, text number 10. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things, but I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny nor anything else you have mentioned. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Deha Smriti Nahi Yara, Samsara Bandhana Kaha Tara. One who is spiritually advanced has no connection with the body or with the bodily actions and reactions. When one comes to understand that he is not the body and therefore is neither fat nor skinny, one attains the topmost form of spiritual realization. When one is not spiritually realized, the bodily conception entangles one in the material world. At the present moment, all human society is laboring under the bodily conception. Therefore, in the Shastras, people in this age are referred to as Dvipada Pashu, two-legged animals. No one can be happy in a civilization conducted by such animals. Our Krishna consciousness movement is trying to raise fallen human society to the status of spiritual understanding. It is not possible for everyone to become immediately self-realized like Jadabharata. Thank God. No, yeah. However, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1, First Canto, Chapter 2, Text 18, Nastaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By spreading the Bhagavata principles, we can raise human society to the platform of perfection. When one is not affected by the bodily conceptions, one can advance to the Lord's devotional service. Nashtaprayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtike. The more we advance our freedom from bodily conception, the more we are fixed in devotional service, and the more we are happy and peaceful. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says that those who are too materially affected continue the bodily conception. Such persons are concerned with different bodily symptoms, whereas one freed from bodily conception lives without the body, even in the material condition. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya ज्ञानञ्जनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। इन द purport, Prabhupada writes, no one can be happy in a civilization conducted by such animals. When Gandhi visited England for the first time, he appeared there in a dhoti that was very short, like almost like a loincloth. No shirt, just a chadar wound around a stick. And he was such a piece that everyone wanted to see. Who is this person from India who has made so much havoc in Her Majesty's kingdom? And they were stunned to see him like that. And one of them asked, when they made him tour the mines and the steel factories, and they were all wearing, you know, the London-made coats and fancy clothes, they asked him, what do you think about Western civilization? And his answer was, that would be a very good idea. That would be a very good idea. They were saying, how do you think how civilized we are? And he was saying, it would be nice for you to become civilized. What do you think about Western civilization? I think it would be a very good idea. And British people, their humor is very subtle. They caught it. So any civilization that doesn't encourage a person to consider reality beyond the body is not civilized. It's not civilization. In fact, you can do anything in such a so-called civilized society. But if you run away or neglect or don't care for truth with a capital T, the fact that we are spiritual living entities that are totally distinct from the material body, then such a civilization, rather than uplifting its populace, forces or encourages its population to go to hell. In fact, it speeds it up. The idea of civilization, the word itself, means to uplift a group, uplift an entire society from some lower condition to a higher value of life. But in the modern context, the only value of life is economic development. And part of economic development is, that's what drives everything else for people. So in this case, the context is, this is the first time, these are the first words ever from the mouth of Jadabharata. He has never spoken before this, never. So we can appreciate that every word that must be coming out must have such weight, such value. The fact that he decided to speak, and he spoke not when his head was being chopped off by the dacoits. He didn't say, hey, what are you doing? Do you know I'm Mahabhagavata? They didn't protest. But when Maharaj Rahugana chastised them, he decided to speak. So there is a lot of weight in these words. Because a sadhu, one of the qualities of a sadhu is that his speech is very grave. He himself is grave, his speech is very grave. Grave implies depth. It implies meaning. It implies deliberation. So it's not some speech that slips us. You know, most of the time for us, our speech slips us. Oh, what did I say? In fact, I didn't even realize. It's after when we hear it with the public, we realize, whoa, what did I say? What was I thinking? The people ask like that, what were you thinking? And that's needed to ask because people don't know what they're thinking. It's not something that they're aware of. What they're thinking is only, I guess they become aware after they have spoken it. Oh, what did I say? But a sadhu like here is very grave. Everything is well thought out. There's a lot of weight in those words. And he's chastising Maharaj Rahugana back, but very nicely. How did Maharaj Rahugana chastise Jadabharata? First there was sarcasm, and then there was the power of a king. I'm going to kill you, rascal, or something like that. And his response is, who are you chastising? Are you chastising the soul? Because the soul doesn't have all these problems that you're talking about. And if you're chastising the body is inert anyway. So what's the meaning of chastising something that's dead? It's like telling the table, I don't like because you're black. It doesn't matter. It has no effect to it. So who are you chastising? And Maharaj Rahugana had such a spin, he almost fell out of his palanquin. It's like, I've never heard anything like this. So earlier he had called him, you're very thin, must be very weak. You've been carrying the palanquin for a long time, so you must be tired. And later you told him, you're such a fat slob, you're not doing anything. So the verse starts with, fatness, thinness, how does it matter? It's for the body. It's nothing to do with the soul. The soul is neither fat nor thin. It doesn't have material bodily or material or mental distress. These are good to know. This list is very, very good to know because it tells us what realm we are hovering on. Especially in this country, one of the problems with this country, or let's say in general, is obesity. And this generally people are so obsessed with the problem of obesity. By the time it is January or by March, it is said that all fitness clubs, their memberships go up severely, very, very quickly. And by the time it is February, the membership drops because people don't really follow through. But if you see in America, especially in America, everything is designed in such a way that if you are obese, you feel yourself completely out of place. If you find yourself different from the norm, that it's not a norm, but if you do find yourself different from the airbrushed models on Vogue magazine or whatever magazine, they make you feel like hell. How can you be like that? Why are you not tall, thin, you know, good looking, in a bikini or something? You must be like, this is for the women. And for the men, you have to be like those models. And if you're not, then they make you feel like something's really wrong with you. Because there's this whole stereotype that good looks means thin, muscular, whatever is the criterion. All of this is such absorption in the body. And this absorption in the body is for only one pleasure. It's for sex desire. Because all of one's material absorption culminates in the satisfaction of that desire. So the idea to good, look good, be attractive, others will look at me, or others should look at me, make people's heads turn. This is all bodily conception. So here the list is things in which people's minds are absorbed. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement. This is really big, disagreement. Desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. So as long as one experiences these things, or when one experiences these things, one should immediately know, oh, I'm operating on the bodily conception of life. So thirst, hunger, these are more difficult. Disagreement, etc. Disagreement, anger, fear. They are manifestations or affects of what the false ego tells us who we are, or what we should be, or how others should recognize us. Anger, oh, they did not see the same way that I see, or they think I am such and such, or whatever is this things that bring about anger. Another reason, or the reason anger manifests, is because of unfulfilled expectations. Dhyayato vishayan pumsam sangasteshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamah kamat krodho vijayate. Because we have a desire, we become very attached to that desire. And kamat krodho vijayate. As soon as we have an expectation, whether it is fulfilled or not, we should know that anger is about to manifest. Even if our so-called desire is being fulfilled, still anger will manifest. Because our desires are so specific, and to satisfy us and to please us is very, very difficult. In fact, it's easier to please Krishna than to please someone to please us. Because Krishna is so saragrahi, he accepts anything in one sense. Especially coming through Lord Chaitanya, everything is quite easy. But to get someone else to please us, it's not easy. Or for us to please someone else. Therefore, it's not so easy always to please others. And people say, why Vaishnavas? Just please Krishna, so much easier. He just stands there and accepts everything that I do. Others will say, what is this? This is not okay. So there's always anger associated with it. Even if the desire is being fulfilled, we are upset with why it's not fulfilled that way. Or fear. Fear is associated whenever we feel that the body is in danger. Although this is not who we are, but the body, anything that has to do with putting the body in a dangerous position, then we have fear. And as simple as going out in the cold or heat or rain or starving. Therefore, we act in such a way to always mitigate that fear. Do I have enough food? Do I have sufficient clothing for the cold? Do I have medication for the particular ailment? Am I going to become vulnerable to any disease? It's in the feedback. Can you turn it off? Take take it outside, please. Take it outside. Take the bead bag outside, please. So Narottam Das Thakur, he is saying, Deha Smriti Nahi Yara, Samsara Bandhana Kaha Ara. Deha Smriti is one whose absorption is not in the body. For such a person, where is the question of Samsara Bandhana, being bound to this material realm? Now, there are two categories of persons who don't have Deha Smriti. One is the Mahabhagavata, on this side of the continuum. On the other end of the continuum is a complete dull-headed fellow, or someone who is severely intoxicated. They don't have Deha Smriti. Anyone had the experience of being intoxicated, like severely intoxicated? You're all sadhus. Maybe you don't have. Do you know anyone? Have you met anyone? Maybe that's an easier question to answer. They have absolutely no awareness of their body. In fact, you could say they are free of bodily conception. No conception of the body. What are they eating? Where they are? Are they standing, or are they vertical or horizontal? Whose house they're in? They don't know. Others have to tell them, hey, you threw up yesterday. That's all. They don't even know. Completely outside of the body, bodily experience. So the mode of ignorance is such that it makes a person act in ways that are detrimental to himself. The mode of passion makes a person act in a way that is satisfying to the body and mind. And the mode of goodness encourages a person to act in a way that is beneficial for the soul. Of course, and transcendental is activities of the soul. Sometimes it seems like the extremes look very similar, but they're not the same. The difference is that on this extreme, on the side of the Mahabhagavatas, they're free of bodily conception because they're full of knowledge and realization. And on this end, a person is completely devoid of any knowledge. Completely devoid. So the call to action is to move progressively in the direction of becoming free of the bodily designations. And that freedom comes when, to whatever degree we can, act on the platform of the soul. Of course, ultimately, the freedom from bodily conception is Krishna's mercy. It's not something I just have to keep doing this and then one day I'll be free of the bodily conception. It's not like that. In fact, we know that as our mood of service unto Krishna is, when it is active, in those few moments, there is an experience of freedom from bodily conception. And whenever that mood of service gets shaken up or modified or transformed, we are immediately in the bodily conception. So in one sense, it's in our hands. In another sense, it's completely Krishna's mercy. And actually speaking, it's both. It is up to us how we want to direct our consciousness. And generally, in any situation, we respond to the circumstance. And how we respond depends upon, very simply put, upon our sense of self at that moment. If the sense of self, what we practice, that at every moment or for long periods of time, that our sense of self is that I'm a servant of Krishna, then I'm sure we have this experience when we're going into a difficult situation or something, and that particular day or moment we're feeling really inspired, we heard something fantastic or we read something and we want to practice it, someone comes and tells us something, and instead of becoming angry, we say, okay, thank you, Prabhu. And we surprise ourselves. It's like, wow, what was that? How we respond depends upon our sense of self. Or on a bad day, or pretty much every day, but on a bad day, or a bad moment, someone says, they didn't even mean to say something. It was just, we interpreted it some way. And immediately, you know, physiologically all the changes manifest. The eyebrows raise, the eyes become red, the fists clench, the lips quiver. And we say, no, no, Prabhu, I'm a servant, but we don't feel that way. However we respond, but it's the affect of fear or anger or something that man, because the sense of identity at that time is, how can they say like that to me? Who am I? I am whatever. Fill in the blank at that moment. So this all these ideas of identity are called upadhis. And as long as there is upadhis are there, we are operating on these upadhis, to offer Krishna pure devotional service is difficult. It's called nirmala. Nirmala means without any contamination. Mala is contamination. So, sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. Tat paratvena nirmalam. Only possibility of offering something pure to Krishna is when we are free from the designations. And we have these designations. It's not like we have to think about them. I'm a man, or I'm such and such. I'm from this ashram. I'm such varna. I have this position. I have that title. It's not something we have to think about. It's there. It's there because we have allowed for those designations to become us. It's called deha atma buddhi. And frankly speaking, the Bhagavatam says that such buddhi is for cows and asses. Janeshu abhigyeshu sa eva gokhara. Only cows and asses think of themselves as the body. So in this case, we're called dvipada pashu, two-legged animals. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, the first lessons, right? The before we enter the university of Krishna, the first thing we hear about is ahara nidra bhayamaithunam cha samanyametat pashubhir naranam. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending are common among all living entities, animals and humans alike. Dharmo adhikohi visheshataha dharmena hina pashubhir samana. This actually is such a useful aphorism. Dharma adhikohi visheshat. The human being is distinguished by a sense of dharma. And we use dharma in different ways depending upon the audience. But the actual meaning of dharma is service to Krishna. If one is clear about that, then that is what distinguishes one from the animals. Otherwise, the general tendency is animalistic response. Anger, fear. You've noticed animals are so fearful. The birds, in fact, always looking around to protect themselves. I ride the bicycle from my home to temple and back, and sometimes I see little rabbits or hares on the street. They come out, and as soon as a vehicle passes a little far away, they run away, afraid, fearful. I mean, it's nice that they're fearful, it protects them. Otherwise, they'd be run over by cars. There is a healthy fear. But the idea is the fear is of losing this body. Fear about losing that upadhi. Whatever, etc. These things we allow. So it is a daily, I guess, reaffirmation for us, hearing Bhagavatam, chanting our rounds, associating with the devotees, etc. These are ways by which we reaffirm that we are not this body. We are servants of Krishna. And it is up to us how much we want to act from that sense of identity versus react from the other sense of identity, the false sense of identity. It's up to us. We've been given the knowledge. It is our responsibility to make that knowledge into realization. If we don't take up that responsibility, that knowledge remains on a theoretical platform, like yesterday we were hearing. There's a lot of difference between theoretical knowledge and realization. So knowledge, anyone who comes to the temple, if you will, have a sense of knowledge. But realization depends upon the person who takes that knowledge and applies it. One who doesn't apply cannot understand how other things operate. It remains inconceivable. Most persons, and I'll end with this, like in America versus India, we've talked about this. In India, when someone dies, the body is taken on procession through the streets, open, on a, there are pall, what they call pallbearers. But there's no casket. It's out in the open. Covered, decorated with flower garlands, people playing drums, music, and they take the body. So everyone can see. And then they cremate the body in the open, along the banks of the Ganges or Yamuna or some crematorium, and it's all in the open. So everyone can watch. Looking at that body that is so dear, burning into, you know, just being reduced to ashes. In America, you can't tell the difference between a single family home and a funeral home. They look the same. They look the same. In fact, it's all clean and neat and fancy. Unless it says funeral home. Oh, okay, that's what. It's right in the neighborhood. You can't tell. I've been in this country 18 years. I've never seen a funeral party. Once I've seen. It's just but a line of cars going zoom, 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 zoom. You never see the body. And no family member sees how it's cremated. No, it's all in the beautiful casket that you can get in Costco apparently nowadays. It's in a casket, all nicely covered, walnut. You can get your choice of wood. Maple, cherry, mahogany, whatever, oak. And it's all nicely covered, lowered down, or doors closed. And at the end of the day, you get some ash. You don't even know if it is your relatives. You may take the neighbor and put him in the Ganges and woo. But it's like, but why? Because it's the reality people don't want you to see. It's too much to bear with it. Oh. That's why in India, at least that practice there, most people become very renounced when they go to the crematorium. That day when they come back after their friend or relative has been cremated, that whole day, they're very sober. And their whole conversation will be about what is the use of material pursuit? After all, this body is going to die. Next morning, back to doing the same things that they were doing. So it's called Smashana Vairagya. Yeah, it's called Smashana Vairagya. Because when they go to the Smashana, the crematorium, it makes you detached from that whole conception of I am this body. It is forced to doing that. And it's nice. It is important. These are reminders. Otherwise we're cheated. We're cheated by the civilization that everything is hunky-dory. Everything is fantastic. Why worry about death? So that civilization that doesn't remind a person or its population about the reality of birth, death, old age and disease is cheating its population. Therefore the devotees openly talk about death and most people are like, whoa, this is so morbid. It's not morbid, it's reality. One must talk about death. In fact, it is morbid for a person who doesn't have an alternative. Then death is really fearful because, wow. But for those who are cultivating spiritual knowledge, death is something that they're hoping that, wow, when it happens, you know, I'll hopefully transition to the other side, to the spiritual realm by the mercy of the devotees and by mercy of Krishna. This is a gift Prabhupada has given, that he has removed that fear of death. He's removed the fear of death and he has shown us how death can be glorious. It doesn't have to be, you know, what it is for most people. That gift that Prabhupada is giving can become our gift when we apply this knowledge. And it starts with the small things. And that's what Jadabharat is trying to impress upon Maharaj Rahugana. 8:10, I'd like to stop because we have a wedding coming up. We need to set up the... We have time for one question or comment. Jai Jagannath Prabhu. Yeah.
Can't actually get out of it. Yeah. Oftentimes we have an experience like that.
Yeah.
And you feel helpless and you don't know what to really do. I am applying the process of Krishna consciousness. I'm chanting. I'm hearing from devotees. I'm trying to serve. I'm honoring prasadam. And then when the tests come up, I'm not passing them. I'm just carried away by material existence or my material nature. So then what to do? Just carry on like that in melancholia or...
Yeah, carrying on like that. So there's a big difference. Earlier, let's say pre-Krishna consciousness, it's not like the anarthas only came once we become devotees. Sometimes people say, hey, before when I was karmi, I didn't have all these problems. Now only I find anger and lust and greed. And all. Before that, there was no problem. Like they say, when you first talk to a new audience, oh, our heart is filled with lust, greed, envy, pride, madness, illusion. The newcomers think, man, these people are suffering. I'm totally free. I don't have all these problems. You chant Hare Krishna for 2 weeks and then you'll know. Like, oh yeah, that's right. There is something going on. So what's changed? Something that has been there for unlimited lifetimes? What has changed now? That I'm aware. That's a big, big, big change. When I become aware, oh, I acted out of, man, one more time, I did something that was really foolish. That awareness is a gift. It's the beginning. It's like the, it's at dawn. The sun hasn't risen yet, but there is some enlightenment. A little, but not too much. And the second is a person wants to genuinely move from that to a higher condition. So that's the gift of, I guess, the fruit of sadhana bhakti. The first two leaves are klesha agni and shubhada. So the klesha agni is first we didn't even know that we were burning. It's klesha. This is klesha everywhere. Klesha Agni. The Agni is the first that there is awareness. Whoa, the house is on fire. And then I want to do something about it. So the awareness is nice. And so a person shouldn't get disturbed, but continue diligently with the sadhana bhakti program. To expect transformation at that rate or fast rates is an unrealistic expectation from the sadhana process. It's not meant to work like that. It is meant to work in gradual, irrevocable ways. If we expect very quick changes, it is possible. How long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada said, not even a moment. But you have to give up fruit of mentality and speculation in those, like not even a moment. But because those are the opposing forces, usually progress is gradual. Gradual doesn't mean slow, it just means step by step. Anukramishyati. So awareness is a very strong tool, it's a great gift to be aware and to something that helps wanting to go to the other side. It's nice. It's just to be patient.
How do we keep ourselves from committing offenses? Because when you're under the thrust of a circumstance and you're operating with a misconception and you're moving, you're trying to gradually move towards the goal, but while you're under the thrust, there's a chance of committing a lot of offenses along the way. And then that will actually cause you to go backwards. A
couple of days back, someone told us, Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj told us, it is nice, we will commit offenses. And that is part of the package. He used the word like over fearful or cautious that, I mean, caution is necessary. But it's not possible that we will lead a squeaky clean without any offense. It will be there. And that's part of the learning process. It will be there. Now, it's not like, anyway, I'm going to make offenses. Prabhu, please forgive me for all my... What's the letter that we get? Please forgive me for all my intentional and unintentional offenses. I mean, if you intentionally offended, there's nothing what to say. Generally, we say for unintentional offenses, something that was not conscious about. But it happens. And that's part of the growing process. We have to accept it. It will happen and not get disturbed by it. And do whatever is necessary. Take whatever corrective steps are necessary. Because in that corrective step is the purification. Oh, I made a mistake. Please let me seek forgiveness from the Vaishnavas. Oh, I made a mistake. Let me seek forgiveness from the deities. I disrespected paraphernalia. I mean, in that is the corrective action is the purification. So it's there, it will happen. And one should become comfortable with it. That's along the way, that will be there. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you. Bhagavatam goes. No, you can't take so many pictures at all. Did you really pay attention to the